And now, Virgin Most Powerful Radio is pleased to present Hands-On Apologetics with renowned Catholic author and apologist, Gary Matuta.
Welcome, everyone. Yes. It is time for apologetics, and you've entered into Virgin Most Powerful's Apologetics Dojo, the, I like to call the Apologetic Zone. I'm Gary Matuta. Welcome. It's great to be with you today. We had a great show yesterday. We had Bobby Hesley actually come physically into the dojo and chat with Master Apologist Jimmy Akin about the Cape Crusader Batman. That was a lot of fun. And, you know, it shows that apologetics can be a lot of fun and wide-reaching. And in that sense, I mean, you could use part of the culture that's out there today to, you know, discuss virtues and things like that. And so it was a great discussion. And, in fact, I thought it was kind of timely, too, because we're going to have the big opening of Endgame coming up, I believe, tomorrow. So there's going to be a lot of comic fans going to be going to the movies, even non-comic fans. And, you know, as Catholics, we should be able to take all thoughts into subjection to Christ and be able to use things like this to explain, defend the faith, if possible. And so that's what we're here for, to explain and defend the faith. And you're part of the problem, not the problem, you're part of the solution. If you want to be part of the program, give us a call at 888-526-2151. That's 888-526-2151. Love to have you on. And so we're going to move from the Cape Crusader battling against the forces of evil to start talking about the problem of evil. And to help us work through that on this program, Master Apologist Carlo Brassard is coming back to the dojo. And he's going to talk to us. You know, we've been doing this continuing series of his book, Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospels, and the Church. And so we're going to talk about the problem of evil. And in fact, let me quote you from his book. It's a great book, by the way, Prepare the Way. I love it because it's so practical. And so it's perfect for hands-on apologetics because it's very hands-on. But anyway, he addresses this section in his book this way. I thought he did a really nice job. He said, "The problem of evil is perhaps the greatest obstacle anyone faces when considering the question of God's existence. In the Summa Theologica, St. Thomas listed as one of the two strongest objections. And the objection from evil usually takes on one of two forms, the intellectual problem and the emotional problem. The intellectual problem involves the question of whether it's reasonable to think God and evil can coexist. And so that's what we're going to be tackling today, is that logical problem of the problem of evil with Carlo Brassard coming up on the other side of the break. And as always, you know, it's we're going to do our exercises, our finding the fallacy. Today's actually a fascinating one. It's called the vacuous truth fallacy. And the Meet the Early Church Father today is talk about villains. The arch-heretic Pelagius is our Meet the Early Father today. So that's going to be interesting. And like I said, if you have a question for Carlo or, you know, a question or comments or anything, give us a call, especially on the other side of the break at 888-526-2151. Or you could send your questions at questions@handsonapologetics.com. That's questions@handsonapologetics.com. I check that every day. So, you know, if you email us, I will see it and reply and maybe even use it in our program, which is always a lot of fun. Time to do our shout out to those watching live stream on social media, such as Facebook and YouTube. Hello, everybody. It's great to see familiar names and also the beautiful spring-like emojis erupting on the YouTube feed. Oh, it's good to see you. And it's also good for you to come and listen to programs. Thank you so much for tuning in. Why don't we talk about finding the fallacy, shall we? The fallacy for today is called vacuous truth. And, you know, every program, we try to take up some logical fallacy, informal logic, sometimes kind of like a pseudo-fallacy, to help us distinguish when somebody is giving a poor argument. So today's poor argument is called vacuous truth. So what is it? Well, the classic example of a vacuous truth is cell phone analogy. Now, pretend you're in a room and there are no cell phones at all in the room. And you make the statement that all the cell phones in the room are turned off. Okay. Which is a true statement in a sense that, it's true, right? All the cell phones are turned off because why? Because there are no cell phones in the room to begin with. But the problem is it doesn't really say anything since there's no cell phones to be turned off or turned on. In other words, you can make just as true of a statement by its contrary. You could say all the cell phones in the room are turned on, or you could say all the cell phones in the room are ringing, or all the cell phones in the room are not ringing. All those are true statements because you don't have a ringing cell phone in the room, but then again, you don't have any cell phones in the room. So what's interesting here is that it's a vacuous truth when you make such a statement. Because why? Well, because it's true, but only on a technicality. Okay, it doesn't really tell us anything about whether something's true or not. In fact, a great illustration is to just come up with some of the most bizarre thing you can come up with, and it'll be true. For example, of all the bright furry animals in the room, all of them are speaking Chinese. Okay, well, that's true because there are no bright furry animals in the room, right? It's like it's true, yet it's totally meaningless at the same time. It's what we call a vacuous truth. Now, I was, before the program, I was racking my brains trying to think of an example. And I don't think I've ever found, and I could be wrong, where I've ever encountered this particular fallacy being used in the field of apologetics, a vacuous truth. But nevertheless, it's always good to be aware of such fallacies. So just in case you encounter it in an argument, you can say, hey, that's a vacuous truth. And then give counterexamples. Just the opposite would be true, for example. All right, very good. I think that's one of our more fun fallacies, but it's not very practical because, like I said, I just can't think of any examples of that actually being committed. But I'll tell you what, if anybody out there has any examples, shoot me an email, or if you're watching online with social media, especially YouTube, because I can see the live feed, throw up an example. I'd really like to see where that would happen in real life. But anyway, let's continue to meet our early church father for today. And early church father is Pelagius. Yes, dum dum dum, the villain. Pelagius is known as the arch heretic. In other words, he is the man who started the heresy. And as you can guess, the heresy is Pelagianism. Okay. We don't know exactly when he was born or when he died. Very likely he's a native of Ireland. Or if not, he's probably from one of the isles. He came to Rome about the year 384 and remained there as an ascetic and a monk until around 410 AD. Then he fled to Carthage along with his disciple, Sallustius, which, by the way, we talked about a few shows ago, in order to evade the Visigoths' invasion of Rome. And it was around 410 AD in Carthage that his teachings met their first opposition, namely from the great bishop of Hippo, known as St. Augustine. So in around 412, Augustine begins to write against Pelagian's teachings. He's excommunicated at the Council of Carthage in 411. Pelagius then took refuge in the east, where in 415, Jerome took up his pen against him. But in the east, he also enjoyed the confidence the various bishops like John of Jerusalem, who really didn't have too much of a problem with Pelagius. The Pelagian doctrines were condemned in the Council of Carthage and also Milovice in 416. It's also condemned by Pope St. Innocent I in 417. And after some vacillation with Pope Zosimus, it was finally condemned in 418 by Pope Zosimus. Finally, Pelagianism was condemned outright in Canons 1 and 4 at the Ecumenical Council of Ephesus in AD 431. And right around 418, Pelagius kind of just disappears from history. And so we can presume that he most likely died around that time. And so you're probably asking yourself, well, what is Pelagianism? And let me give you this quote from Jurgens, Faith of the Early Fathers. He says, the basic principle of Pelagianism is the affirmation of the self-sufficiency of man's free will. Pelagius asserted that by relying solely on our own powers, a man can always will and do what is good. Pelagianism involves a further denial of original sin, a denial of the absolute necessity of baptism, and it presents a total distortion of the theology of grace. Insofar as his moral conduct is concerned, it must be admitted that he led a life of exemplary virtue. Pelagius wrote numerous writings. He was very prolific. And it's funny how arch heretics are so prolific in their writing, but very few of them have preserved in their full extent down to our own time, and few under his name. So that's our Meet the Early Church Father today, the arch heretic Pelagius. And coming up on the other side of the break, we're going to talk to Carlo Brassard, Master Apologist from Catholic Answers, about the philosophical or the logical problem of the existence of God and the presence of evil in the world. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And again, if you have any questions that you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 888-526-2151. We'd love to hear from you. You listen to Catholic Answers, or not listen to Catholic Answers, you listen to Hands-On Apologetics with Catholic Answers, Carlo Brassard. Whew, I got to get my facts straight. And I'll see you right after the break. Stay tuned, everybody.
This is Terry Barber inviting you, all the men, to a men's conference June 15th at the Sacred Heart Chapel. This is going to be a day where we're going to talk about true masculinity. You know, there's a problem in the Catholic Church today. We have very few men who love the Catholic faith. And I know a lot of the wives that I'm listening to right now saying, I want my husband to be on fire for the faith. Send him to the men's conference. Your son, send him to the men's conference by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. That's June 15th. When your husband comes back from this conference or your son, they're going to have a different view about their Catholic faith because they're going to meet three men who love Jesus and his bride, the church, and are going to instill in them a love for Christ and his church, the Eucharist, Our Lady. Bring them to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. Sign up there or call 877-526-2151. Full sheen ahead.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome back, everybody, Hands-On Apologetics. And we have our guest master apologist, Carlo Brassard, who's a native of Crowley, Louisiana. For more than a decade, he traveled around the country teaching apologetics, biblical studies, theology, philosophy, Kylo has published articles on a variety of subjects in the Catholic Answers magazine. He's a regular guest on Catholic Answers Live, and he's also an active blogger at Catholic.com. Kylo holds undergraduate and graduate degrees in theology from Catholic Distance University and the Augustine Institute, and is currently working on his master's in philosophy at Holy Apostles College and Seminary. He's also worked for several years with a man that I admire quite a bit, theologian Father Robert J. Spitzer at the Magis Center for Faith and Reason. And Kylo, welcome to Hands on Apologetics.
Hey, Gary. Thanks for having me on again, my friend.
Hey, do you ever have a day where your brain is saying one thing and your mouth says another?
Oh, indeed. All day long, every day, my friend.
Well, I am being afflicted really bad today. I don't know. It's just I'm reading stuff, and all of a sudden I hear different words coming out of my mouth.
I sympathize. Trust me.
Which brings up the problem of evil, doesn't it? I mean,
that's right.
That's
yes,
a natural evil.
That's right. There's a lack of do good there.
Well, hey, yeah, thank you for coming on. We've been going through your book, Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church. It's an outstanding book, and I love how practical it is. And when it comes to the problem of evil, Carlo, that is a very simple objection that requires a very careful answer. And you do such a great job in that book unpacking that.
Thank you. Yeah, so, you know, the last time we were on, when I was on with you in the dojo, Hands-On Apologetics, yep. We talked about the emotional problem of evil, which basically is someone having a, not necessarily engaging with the intellectual puzzle of reconciling God's existence and the presence of evil in the world, but experiencing emotional pain for God allowing bad things to happen to him or her, and trying to find purpose and meaning in the suffering in order to not be entrapped by the death grip of despair and depression. You know, and so we asked the question, well, what sort of light can Christianity shine within the midst of the darkness in order to keep someone from despair and to imbue their suffering with meaning and purpose in order to give them hope for the redemption of suffering and the eternal life of heaven? So that was the emotional problem, sort of you might even call it a pastoral problem, you know, of how do you pastorally walk somebody or, you know, walk with somebody through those waters of suffering and navigate that. But then there's also the intellectual problem. And so I'm assuming that's what you want to talk about today.
Yeah, in fact, you know, of the two, I would guess that the emotional problem's probably more pervasive than the intellectual problem. Am I correct?
Sure. Yeah, for the most part, it is. I mean, you often have somebody entrenched in the emotion and saying, you know, how can God be all good and allow this stuff to happen to me? Which, you know, is sort of a philosophical question and an emotional problem, you know, intertwined together. And sometimes you have folks going back and forth. Somebody might start off with the intellectual problem and saying, well, you know, God's existence and evil are logically contradictory and incompatible with one another. And then when you begin to give the philosophical answers that we're going to examine, some of them today, they will probably resort back to the emotional problem and say, oh, well, you wouldn't say that to a six-year-old who has cancer, or to, you know, somebody who lost their loved one, as if to imply that your philosophical answer is unsound and no good because it's cold and abstract, and you wouldn't say that to somebody who's in the moment experiencing terrible evil and suffering. Yeah. But that's simply a non sequitur, right? I mean, so just because you wouldn't say one answer in a certain circumstance, it doesn't follow that the answer is no good. It's just a matter of being aware of certain sensitivities and discerning what's the appropriate answer given the circumstances. But nevertheless, the intellectual answers to the intellectual problem of evil are necessary and are extremely important because you need to have an intellectual ground to know that evil does not disprove God's existence. And then, of course, upon that foundation, you can begin to build an edifice or a house, you might say, or a building of sort of pastoral answers to navigate the waters of the problem of evil.
Right. Yeah, very good. Yeah, so it seems like, you know, it's the pain of evil that makes people kind of throw out intellectual justifications for them turning against God rather than people. But there are atheists who will construct a logical deduction or argument against God's existence.
Sure. It's pretty powerful. You know, I mean, it's not something for us to take lightly. I mean, the objection from evil is one of the two greatest objections, and at least in the mind of Aquinas, and I think we could agree with him. I mean, you know, in his article in which he treats God's existence in the Summa Theologiae, he only gives two objections, and one of to God's existence, and one of those objections is the problem of evil. So the intellectual problem, Gary, actually has two versions, and so I want to try to make some distinctions here to set it up so that we know we have a clear understanding of which target we're going to be shooting at and which particular arrows we need to pull from the quiver, right? Okay. So the intellectual problem has two versions, the logical version and the evidential version. So the logical version asserts that the existence of evil and the existence of God are logically contradictory. That's to say, it's impossible for God and evil to coexist, just like it's impossible to have a square circle, or it's impossible for something to both be and not be in the same respect, same place and time, right? Mm-hmm. So the argument goes, if an all-good and all-powerful God exists, evil can't exist. But since evil does exist, well, then therefore God doesn't exist, right? So that's the logical version of the intellectual problem of evil. The evidential version acknowledges and says, well, maybe it's not logically contradictory for God and evil to exist, but because there's so much gratuitous evil in the world, I mean, if you look at all of the evidence, put all of the evidence of so much useless evil in the world and suffering that there's possibly no good that could come from it, and you weigh that against the proposition God exists and an all-good God, well, then that gives us good rational justification to conclude that it's unlikely that God exists. So rather than trying to show it's logically impossible for God and evil to exist, this version of the intellectual problem, the evidential version, says it's probably the case that God doesn't exist given the extreme amount of evidence of gratuitous or useless evil in the world. So those are the two versions of the intellectual problem, the logical version and the evidential version that I set up in the book. Now, there's one more little brief nuanced distinction to make. If we're considering the logical version, which remember says that it's logically impossible for God and evil to coexist, for those who argue from the logical version, some atheists identify the problem in God being the creator of all things. So they think God and evil are logically contradictory because if everything comes from God and evil exists, well, then God must create evil, right? And of course, if God creates evil, then he can't be all good, in which case he doesn't exist since God's omnibenevolence belongs to the classical definition of God. So do you see how one of the problems within the logical version is God being the creator of all things, not being able to reconcile God, the creator of all things, and evil existing. Others, perhaps, see the problem in an all-good God permitting evil and not eliminating it. So they might think that, well, maybe God doesn't create evil, but he still indeed does permit the evil. And if he were all good, well, then he would wipe out all evil. So it's still contrary, or someone might argue it's contrary to God's all-good nature to allow evil when he has the power to stop. And for that reason, they conclude that God and evil are logically contradictory. So you have the logical version, the evidential version. Within the logical version, you have two problems. Either the problem is God being the creator of all things and God creating evil, or the problem is God permitting evil and not eliminating it. So that's sort of the setup of the problem of evil in all of its various forms.
Yeah, very good. And you know, one thing I love about your book is you have charts. I think charts speak a million words. And
indeed.
And folks, if pick up this book, Prepare the Way, because it's laid out so logically. And he goes through it just like you did, you know, breaking it down into different parts. And you're absolutely right.
Right.
The problem's either with God as creator or the problem is with God's permission.
That's right.
You know, I always have to wonder, we won't have enough time to start jumping into, you know, how do we unpack this? But I always wonder, where did they get the idea that an all-good God would never permit any evil? Do you know,
right.
Do they ever appeal to any authority for that? Or
not that I'm aware of. It's just sort of an intuition that one takes to the problem, that one has as they approach the problem, that if somebody is perfectly good, then it belongs to that good nature to eliminate evil as far as possible. And of course, they're appealing to their own human experience. So like if I see evil occurring within, you know, if I see some lady getting beat up by her, you know, wacko husband or boyfriend at the gas station, right? And I judge that I have, within the circumstances, I have the power to stop that infliction of evil. And I don't. Well, then that contradicts my good nature. That counts against my goodness, right? And so many will appeal to this sort of common intuition of how, you know, if we're good people, we need to try to stop and eliminate evil as much as we can. So they take that to God and say, well, God is all-knowing and all-powerful, so there's no evil that he cannot eliminate. And if he's all good, well, then it follows from his goodness that he must eliminate the evil as far as he can, which means, given his omnipotence, he can eliminate it entirely.
Mm-hmm.
And since he doesn't, well, therefore, he's not all good, in which case he doesn't exist, because the classical definition of God is that he's all good. So on the other side of the break, what we'll do is we'll try to attack that assumption and show that it's flawed.
Excellent. We're talking with Master Apologist Carlo Brossard and unpacking the problem of evil. Stay tuned, everybody. We got more coming at you.
This is Terry Barber inviting you, all the men, to a men's conference June 15th at the Sacred Heart Chapel. This is going to be a day where we're going to talk about true masculinity. You know, there's a problem in the Catholic Church today. We have very few men who love the Catholic faith. And I know a lot of the wives that I'm listening to right now are saying, I want my husband to be on fire for the faith. Send him to the men's conference. Your son, send him to the men's conference by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. That's June 15th. When your husband comes back from this conference or your son, they're going to have a different view about their Catholic faith, because they're going to meet three men who love Jesus and his bride, the church, and are going to instill in them a love for Christ and his church, the Eucharist, Our Lady. Bring them to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. Sign up there or call 877-526-2151. Full sheen ahead.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
This is Jesse Romero. You're listening to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda on Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
And welcome back, everybody. We are talking with Master Apologist Carlo Brassard about the problem of evil. And Carlo just did a great job outlining the different types and flavors of the philosophical, logical argument from evil. So, Carlo, where do we go? How do we start to answer this problem?
Yeah, well, let's see if we can briefly touch on the problem of God being the creator of all things, because somebody might think that God and evil are logically contradictory, because if God is the creator of all things and evil exists, then God must have created evil, right? And so, therefore, that would make God evil, he can't be all good, and therefore, he just doesn't exist. So what I do in my book is I walk you through a couple of strategies in, sort of directing your approach or your answer to that particular problem. And you have to start off with a correct understanding of evil, whether it be physical or moral. So like physical evil is like evil suffered. So physical evil would be if I'm suffering from a virus, or our house is destroyed from a tornado, or earthquake. Moral evil, of course, is what we would call sin. Now, evil, whether physical or moral, is actually a privation of a do good, or a privation of some of being that ought to be there, right? A do good is a good that ought to be there. Now, here's the thesis. Once we understand what evil is as a privation of a do good, a privation of being that ought to be there, so it's a lack of being that should be there, then we can conclude that it's not made to be by God. Okay, so here's some examples. Here's some concrete examples. What is it about blindness that makes it bad or evil? So I'm pulling from Aquinas and Augustine, sort of the classical tradition of an understanding of the privation of evil as a privation. So what is it about blindness that makes it bad? Well, I'm sure you would agree with me, Gary, that it's because the eye lacks the sight that it ought to have, given the kind of thing it is, right?
Right.
You might even look at the example of a hole in a sock, right? And we say, okay, that's a bad sock. And, my wife tells my 14-year-old boy who has holes, he's got a 15-size shoe, right? He's a big boy, and he's got these holes in his socks. And my wife is always telling him, son, throw your socks away. They're no longer any good. Okay, well, what is it that makes a sock with a hole in it bad? Well, it's missing or lacking what ought to be there, given the kind of thing it is, namely fabric, right?
Yeah, okay.
And so we could look at any other physical evil. My whole family was just dropping like flies with a cold a couple of weeks ago, right? So we had some sort of germ there or a virus that was causing a defect in our health. We were lacking the health that we ought to have, given the kinds of things that we are. Even for moral evil, you have a privation of what ought to be there. So, like, for example, murder, right? What makes murder bad or morally evil? Well, it's a deprivation of justice. You're failing to give the other person his due in protecting his innocence. Or it's a failure to love your neighbor, which nature inclines us all to do. So moral evil is an action that lacks the proper order according to the moral law given to us by God, inscribed within our nature. So whether we're talking about physical evil or moral evil, what we have is a gap between what actually is and what should be. And when we're repulsed by this evil, as one philosopher states it, we're lamenting at the absence of being, the fact that what could and should be there is not there. So notice how evil is a lack of being. It's a lack of due being, of being that ought to be there, a lack of due good or good that ought to be there. So it's not really an actual subsistent positive thing that is has an active being distinguished from nothing, like positive qualities, like green in the banana that's not ripe yet. It's not, it doesn't have positive attributes, so it's a lack of being. Now, this is not to say that it's an illusion. No, the hole in the sock really is there. The blindness, it really is there. But what we're saying is that evil is not some being subsisting that can be the effect of God's causal activity, you see? Because the proper effect, Gary, of God's creative activity is being. Only that which is real or has being can be attributed to God as a proper effect of his creative action. So here's the bottom line. Here's the conclusion. If evil is the absence of being, what is not there, and God can only create being what is there, well, then it follows that God cannot make evil to be. As the philosopher Brian Davis from Fordham University puts it, what is not there cannot be thought of as made to be by the source of the being of things. So we can conclude that evil, whether moral or physical, cannot intelligibly be thought of as something which God makes to be. So recall that this problem, the atheist was hung up on the idea that God creates evil. And that can't be, right? Well, we're challenging that assumption. No, God doesn't create evil. So we can see that, at least according on this front, it's not logically contradictory to say that God exists and all good God exists and evil exists if your problem is thinking God creates evil. Do you see? Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I think most people in their imagination think of evil as a thing. But, you know, if you think about it, you can't go to the grocery store and pick up a couple of cans of evil or even evil concentrate, right? It's a defect or a lack of something, a good that's due to something. It's not a thing. So say that God created something that doesn't exist, that seems to be contradictory in itself.
It's unintelligible, correct. It's unintelligible. Yeah, okay. Now, keep in mind that this understanding of evil is important to grasp for the sake of showing that God doesn't create evil. If the problem is thinking God creates evil and therefore they're logical, you know, that God can't create evil. And this is why it's so important to have that understanding, a proper understanding of evil, in order to show that evil is not an effect of God's creative action.
Very good. Very good. Yeah, so that takes care of that one line of problem.
Right.
Where else do we go after that?
Yeah, well, somebody, before we even go on to the next problem, like the problem being that God permits evil, which we can maybe pick up in our next section, our next segment. But one question, before we move to that problem, one question comes up. Okay, well, if evil is not the effect of God's creative action, well, then what does cause the privation? What is or are the causes of privation of due goods, whether we're talking about moral evil or physical evil? And obviously, everything's held in existence by God, so God's going to have some causal role, right? So we have to ask, does God have some causal role, and what is it and what it's not in the cases of physical and moral evil? So let's take physical evil first. When we're talking about physical evil, we're talking about, once again, the privation of a due good within the nature of things within the material world. So one of the things that we have to keep in mind is that it's part and parcel of material things to have a potential to corrupt. That's just part and parcel of material things. Barring God's miraculous action of preserving a material thing from corrupting, it belongs to the nature of material things to have the potential to corrupt, to break down into their component parts. Now, within a material world, material things break down and corrupt, so defect is brought about in material things from the flourishing activity of something else, which is a good. So to illustrate this point, right, you have the deer that suffers death due to the fire succeeding and giving off heat in the forest. The gazelle becomes defective, physical evil, due to the flourishing activity of the lion eating the gazelle, right? So the good of the lion curtails the good of the gazelle. You might have a virus that's doing well and flourishing as a virus within me. The germs are flourishing and causing a defect in my health. That's part and parcel of the material world, where the goodness of one thing curtails the goodness of another. So there's always a concomitant good, some good associated with evil suffered. Now, for this physical evil being part and parcel of the material world, God's causally related to such physical evil in as much as he is causing the flourishing of those things that cause defect in others. So whatever thing is functioning as it ought to function and flourish in its activity, God's ultimately responsible for that being, for that good, for that flourishing activity, which given the material world, is going to curtail the goodness of something else. So God, by causing in things the good of the order of the universe, consequently causes the corruption of other things, as Aquinas puts it. So you might say that evil suffered, or physical evil, is an indirect result of God's causal activity sustaining things in being and causing them to flourish as the kinds of things that they are. So God is only causing good within the case of physical evil. So that's how we would explain the cause of physical evil, but also God's causal role within that realm of physical evil. And even God can be responsible for ordering certain things within his providential plan to bring about physical evil within, for example, the context of punishment, and it not be contrary to his goodness. So, for example, I as a father might give a little swat on my four-year-old's bottom within the context to teach him a lesson, or withhold my son from having the pleasures of certain things due to some misdeed for the sake of punishment, and that doesn't count against my goodness, just like for God punishing others. So we can pick up with that on the other side of the break.
Very good, very good. We're talking with Kylo Broussard on the problem of evil. Stay tuned, everyone.
This is Terry Barber inviting you, all the men, to a men's conference June 15th at the Sacred Heart Chapel. This is going to be a day where we're going to talk about true masculinity. You know, there's a problem in the Catholic Church today. We have very few men who love the Catholic faith. And I know a lot of the wives that I'm listening to right now are saying, I want my husband to be on fire for the faith. Send him to the men's conference. Your son, send him to the men's conference by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. That's June 15th. When your husband comes back from this conference, or your son, they're going to have a different view about their Catholic faith, because they're going to meet three men who love Jesus and his bride, the church, and are going to instill in them a love for Christ and his church, the Eucharist, Our Lady. Bring them to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. Sign up there or call 877-526-2151. Full sheen ahead.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome back, everybody. Hands-On Apologetics. And we are sitting under the teaching of guest sensei Carlo Broussard. Carlo's doing a great job unpacking evil. And first, he starts off with evil as a privation of a good that's due. Like we said, evil isn't a thing that, like, you can buy 2 pounds of evil. And then you're talking about causal. You know, God does cause evil in a sense that he brings about a good. You know, Carlo, would this analogy work that a sun brings about the good of a tree, but it could bring about a physical evil of the plants living in the shade of that tree?
Yes, and sort of in causing the flourishing activity of the tree, there are certain effects from the flourishing activity of the tree that's going to bring about evil in a plant right by it, which is not allowed to flourish itself and grow and sink its, you know, plant roots deep into the ground because the tree roots are interfering with it, right?
Yeah,
so that's
right.
A great example. Yeah, that's a great example of how the good of one thing curtails the goodness of another. And this is, you know, for St. Thomas Aquinas, this is the result of God willing to have a material universe with a multiplicity of beings, and to have a multiplicity of beings manifest God's goodness more than a universe or a world with just angelic beings or just human beings. To have the multiplicity or the diversity of beings manifest God's goodness in a greater way. And with that comes, given the nature of material things, the goodness of one thing curtailing the goodness of another, which brings about physical evil. And God, and that in no way contradicts God's goodness, because this is part and parcel of the material world. Now, you could have a problem with God deciding to create to begin with, to create a material world to begin with, and that's another issue that we would have to address. But God does not even create the defect in things, because he's only willing the good of some things, which brings about defects in others. Now, that defect of physical evil, as I was mentioning before the break, can be integrated into God's providential plan, because it could point or be ordered to the good of the whole of the universe itself, such as the variety of diversity of beings, etc. But keep in mind that God does not will or bring about within his providential plan physical evils as an end in and of themselves. They're only brought about or willed to be a part of his providential plan because of, and this leads us to strategy three, some greater good, such as the good of the whole, or to preserve the good of the whole, right? And I articulate this more in detail within the book. But now this leads us to the next problem. So we've dealt with the problem of God being the creator of all things, but perhaps the problem is God permitting evil. And once again, we're still in this logical version where God and evil are logically incompatible with one another. And for some, the problem is God being all good necessarily must eliminate all evil as he can. And since he's omnipotent, he would have the power to eliminate evil completely. But here's the question, Gary.
Okay.
Must a good person always eliminate evil as far as he can? Because I can, and I would submit, I would answer no. I can think of a couple of examples where permitting an evil, even though one has the power to stop it, wouldn't necessarily count against one's goodness. So, for example, you know, sometimes my kids, they fall, they get a cut on their knee, they get a bobo, right? And they go run into mommy, and mommy cleans out the bobo, because if daddy cleaned out the bobo, I would faint, because I just don't do blood very well, right? Now, I might be peeking over her shoulder, standing in the doorway of the bathroom, right, watching what's going on, or kind of, you know, overseeing what's going on. Now, my wife is inflicting physical pain upon my child as she's cleaning out the bobo. Maybe she's pouring peroxide or wiping it out with some sort of cleaner or something. And I have the power to stop that physical evil being inflicted upon my child. But does it count against my goodness as a father that I don't stop the physical evil and eliminate the physical evil? And I think we can reasonably say, no, it doesn't necessarily count against my goodness. Why is that? Because I am aware of a greater good that will be brought about from me permitting that evil, right? So here's another example. Let's assume, for argument's sake, that contraception is immoral. Now, we philosophically analyze and say it is, right? But if I'm talking to a skeptic who might not accept that, I'll just say, let's just say, for argument's sake, let's say contraception is immoral. Does it count against a ruler's goodness, like a governor, right, or somebody who's in charge of the society? Does it count against a ruler's goodness if he chooses not to penalize couples that are using contraception? And I think you can see that the answer would be no. I mean, it would be within accord with right reason for the ruler to make a law that would prohibit the distribution of contraceptives. But to actually police and penalize couples who use it, if he were to do so, well, then a great good would be lost. Namely, it would violate the good of privacy and the intimacy that belongs to the nature of the sexual act. So we can see in these examples that there may be some greater good that might come about from permitting an evil, or if I wouldn't permit an evil, some greater good might be lost. And so we can see with these examples that it's not necessarily true that a good person would always eliminate evil as far as he can. And so the same principle can be applied with God. This at least shows that it's not logically contradictory to say that an all good God exists and evil exists, because it's possible, given an all-powerful, all-knowing, and an all-good God, it's possible that there is a greater good that he is aware of and wills to bring about, given the opportunity of the evil that he's permitting, whether it's a physical evil or a moral evil. And if he's infinite, Gary, well, then there's no good that he couldn't bring about to outweigh the evil that he permits. So if an all-good, all-powerful, and all-knowing God exists, well then, it's possible that evil exists and it not contradict his three omnis, right? His all-good nature, his all-powerful nature, his all-knowing nature, because there may very well be some greater good that he could bring about. And Aquinas would say that given God's all-good nature, he cannot permit evil unless he wills to bring about a greater good, or that he wills to preserve some great good by the permission of evil. So we can at least see that it's not logically contradictory to say that God is all-good and at the same time permits evils to exist. Now, somebody might say, well, Carlo, and this gets into sort of the evidential problem, which we, you know, we're running out of time here. We don't have time to go into detail, but somebody might say, well, Carlo, you know, what good could possibly come from this atrocious evil that God permits to happen, right? Whether it's, you know, pedophilia or somebody killing an innocent human being or earthquakes destroying innocent human lives or whatever. Somebody might say, well, there's no good that could possibly come from that. But how do we know that? Given our finite minds and our limited knowledge and time restricted with this time and this space, how could we possibly know that there is no good that an infinite an all-powerful God could possibly bring about. So our lack our ignorance of a good that could come about from a permitted evil cannot be a reason to conclude that it's likely God doesn't exist.
Yeah, that's very good because, just because we can't see the reason or the greater good that would be brought about by a particular evil, it does not mean that there isn't one, because after all, we have limited intellects and we can only see so far in the future.
We should expect, given our finite limitations in knowledge, not to see a greater good that an infinite, all-powerful God wills to bring about.
Yeah, exactly.
Given our finite knowledge, Gary, think about this. How do we know that God right here and right now is not preventing a greater evil in permitting an evil? So it may very well be the case that in permitting an evil, he's actually positively preventing a greater evil, you see?
Yes.
And we just simply cannot possibly, it's metaphysically impossible for us to know that he's not doing that in an absolute way. And so we can't use our lack of knowledge as evidence that God doesn't exist.
Right. Just like when you're inoculated for the flu, evil is introduced, you know, a defective form of the flu virus to build antibodies to prevent you from actually getting the real deal.
Good example.
So how would you know whether there isn't like a bigger evil down the road that could have been permitted by that? Yeah, that's very good.
Yeah.
You know, it's part of suffering that we kind of have this narrow view, you know, like if you have a toothache, all you can think about is the toothache. And you're never thinking about, you know, how does this play into the health of my body or my role in the family? You know, maybe it's because I have a toothache that prevent me from getting in an auto accident or something like that.
We never know. And see, here's where sort of the intellectual philosophical answers can shine some light. Because if I'm in the midst of that suffering, and no matter how terrible it be, and I know intellectually God exists, he's all wise, he's all powerful, and he's all good. And I intellectually know, without a doubt, metaphysically speaking, that he will bring about some greater good given his all good nature. And so I know that, and that can give me hope in the midst of the suffering and at least stop me or block me from falling into despair. Now, granted, it's going to be hard emotionally, right? Not knowing what that greater good is. And that's where Christianity shines light and says, well, this particular suffering, you can imbue it with purpose and meaning and salvific value for the sake of souls and your own soul, etc. But the intellectual answer in showing that the evil doesn't contradict God's existence creates that rational ground, a bedrock, in order for you to have faith.
Very good. Where can people get a hold of your stuff, Carlo?
Yeah, they can go to Catholic.com, CarloBroussard.com, and my book is Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Gary. God bless you, brother.
You too. And coming up tomorrow, we're going to have William Albrecht come in. Just coming off of the debate, we're on the subject, does the New Testament teach the incarnation? That's going to be loads of fun. Also, coming up next, the Terry and Jesse Show, the dynamic duo of Catholic Talk Radio. It's time for me to shut down the Midwest Command Center. And I wish everybody a happy and holy day. God bless. Take care.
In the 1990s, I lived and worked in Hollywood. But when my wife Betty's mom took ill, we relocated to Orange County. And it was during this time in our lives that I converted to Catholicism. Once my eyes were opened to the truth, I couldn't learn enough about the faith. But I had less free time than ever, especially with a long commute. That's when I discovered the real value of Catholic audio. Listening to cassette tapes transformed my daily commute into a miniature retreat. And that's the beauty of Virgin Most Powerful Radio today. Since the podcasts are archived, you can listen anytime on our smartphone app.
I know how listening to Catholic audio can bring you closer to Christ and His church. So I encourage you to visit the App Store or go to vmpr.org and download the app today. It just might change your life. I'm Matthew Arnold for Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.